you don't really need an attribution tool at seven figures because you probably should only be spending money on Facebook. If your customers are buying, your Facebook ads are probably working. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, is it this, is it that? But as you get into eight and nine figures, I talked to somebody from a brand recently who was spending 10K a day on TikTok in platform, and metrics look great. Attribution tools look great. They shut off TikTok because they had a hunch it wasn't that incremental, or they ran an incrementality test, shut it off. No change to new customer revenue. Incrementality is really trying to understand which of your purchases would have happened and which would have not happened if you didn't do marketing. So which are happening because of marketing, which and which aren't.
It feels like it's not a real Down to Chat episode without a little seltzer click-clack.
Oh, crap. I opened mine. What do we got today?
I'm going at a beach plum with a side of tropical punch. I always have a couple of beverages here just to kind of stay safe.
You know what? I was told that that's the best LaCroix, whatever you say. How do you say it?
I don't want to say it on a public.
Called out. Yeah. Tell me later. But I was disappointed by that one. I don't know. I have also shifted to Team Waterloo. We are not at all sponsored. We would love to be sponsored if anyone's listening to this. Maybe some Liquid Death. But I got a ginger citrus twist, which is pretty interesting.
I'm never going to stop not starting off the episode with the seltzer stuff just because I know how much people enjoy it.
Now we have to. Please DM us if you don't like it. Please DM us and tell us to stop and we'll keep doing it. Down to Chat is brought to you by Postscript. In my opinion, Postscript is the SMS platform built for Shopify brands. To be totally transparent, we just switched at Jones Road to Postscript, and it is the best decision we've ever made. We were on a competitor before, and they started tacking on all types of fees. The platform was not being improved at all. It was just getting really expensive, and the service we were getting was just nothing compared to what we've received from Postscript since being with them. The product with Postscript is just hands down the best that I've ever used. To me, it has the best integrations for Shopify stores of all sizes. It's got the best feature set. The segmentation is the easiest and most powerful. The pop-ups are great. But really, the thing that I love is I've never experienced such great service from a software provider. The only time I heard from our previous provider was around contract renewal time. But with Postscript, they've gone out of their way above and beyond to make our program uber successful. And it's really evident that they care about us getting as much value out of our program as possible. So in my opinion, with Postscript, you get the best product on the market, you get it at the best price, and you get it with the best service. There's a reason why the fastest growing Shopify brands like Dr. Squatch, Native, Olipop, Feastables, and now Jones Road Beauty are all using Postscript for their SMS program. Sign up for Postscript today to take your SMS program to new heights.
A couple of things we have going on today. A lot of noise on D2C Twitter as usual. A lot of cost cap stuff, which we'll talk about a different time. A lot of incrementality chat. A couple of things that are going on in my world, and then we'll do the usual where we CX / retention and then growth. I think this week I can kick it off, but we can talk about it at the end, kind of like our conversation around forecasting where Eli became a statistician for 10 minutes with some help.
Thanks
with
to ChatGPT. It's how you turn two guys without a data analyst who have no analytical skills into actually pulling some numbers. It's actually pretty cool.
It's kind of like unreal. And then the other thing, so I was connected with, and this is like a dream. I'm obsessed with Setting the Table, the book by Danny Meyer of Shake Shack and Union Square Hospitality Group, and obsessed with hospitality in general. I think there's a lot of kind of like large interaction or kind of like cross between the two that hasn't been made yet. But I was connected to their CMO and we were talking about the kind of like inflection point where hospitality and CX could be something more than it is. Well, CX and D2C. Want to talk about kind of my findings and the conversation I had there.
I want to hear
your thoughts. So let me kind of like set the stage here. So, you know, Danny Meyer started Union Square Hospitality Group, started off, you know, 11 Madison, a bunch of other cafes and restaurants, and won like 25 James Beard Awards and started Shake Shack. And basically the gist of it is he wrote this book, Setting the Table, which is all about his kind of like ideas around hospitality. Two of my favorite points in that book, which I kind of want to start off with, and then we can talk about how that relates to CX or could relate to CX. Number one is what he calls enlightened hospitality, which is basically the idea that hospitality, if you're obsessed just on customer, you end up having like a really shitty experience on the team side where they feel like it's kind of like the customer is always right, where your team is suffering because they just have to like play a dance. So every single customer is always happy always, versus what he calls enlightened hospitality, which is basically the idea that you put employees first and that leads to happier guests, which in turn leads the, you know, benefits the community, the suppliers, the investors, and the cycle kind of obsessing about employee experience creates an environment where people actually want to work really hard, even more so with hospitality. And I guess that's my point on CX, is like, if you're obsessed with your team and your work and you're excited about it, you're put in a position to treat customers well because you're happy about the job you're doing. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
I love that. I think when we were recruiting you, one of the things that I remember that you stuck with me is like, you're not just trying to find ways to like just get through tickets or stuff, but you're like for example, we're talking about surprise and delight, and you're talking about surprise and delight, and like one of the benefits and one of the things you talked about was how it's actually great for the team because it kind of gives them like a little bit of a dopamine thing, and it like gets them out of their rhythm, and it kind of like almost like makes their week, like as much as it's making the customer's week who you're sending something to, you're actually making the CX person's week, and in what can be a really difficult and monotonous and I guess, you know, unappreciated job. It's like a good moment that kind of keeps them going with momentum. So kind of, that's kind of what sticks out to me there.
It's such an interesting point you bring up. And I think a lot of it really kind of has to do with the learnings I had in hospitality where, so there's setting the table, and then there's Will Gadara, who's the former GM at 11 Madison Park. He wrote a book called Unreasonable Hospitality, which is basically the premise is similar, how it's like all these kind of crazy things that they did in the world of surprise and delight. And a lot of it is just that. Like,
wasn't Danny Meyer 11 Madison or no?
So Danny Meyer was 11 Madison, yeah. And his general manager was Will Gadara. Then Will Gadara bought 11 Madison from Danny Meyer.
Okay. Have you been?
In like 2011. I've not.
Thought it was the most overrated. I love Danny Meyer. I think he's awesome. I've listened to like podcasts and stuff. It's not like my kind of food. Like anytime I've gone to like a Michelin star place, like I remember in Italy we went one time and we had like pizza as like the first course, and like that was my favorite part. Like I was so hungry after 11 Madison, I just wanted to go and get like Shake Shack after it.
You're like me. You're just like attendees. You're like, yeah, exactly. I don't need to. So the funny thing about, I've been to like one or two Michelin starred restaurants, but what I like more than that is like I'm less of a foodie and more of an experience junkie. Like the restaurants so Michael Salmanov from Zahav, like they just treat you so well and they remember you from time to time. Like every time you come there, they know what you like, what you don't like. And I think that's like the I'd rather take like a 3 out of, you know, if it's a number 3, the third best food, but better service, that's always my go-to. But
So here's my question for you then, right? Like, because in hospitality or like hotels, right? Like they do it amazingly well. So it's either services or hospitality, or I guess, I don't know what you consider hotels, but like if you've stayed at like a really nice hotel, like they just do such a great job, like if like the Ritz or something like that, right? And how do you do that? They're able to do it because they're high touch, they're high ticket, right? But we are not doing that. You know, we're selling a few units of makeup online to thousands and thousands of customers. And so it's harder to create those wow experiences. It's harder to stand out with that. How do you think about doing that? And tell me if you're okay with the conversation going there, because like that's my genuine question.
This is exactly where it's funny because you didn't see the show notes because we decided to do a podcast 5 minutes ago. But this is exactly where this is the premise of where I'm heading. So Cody Segway Plofker, back at it again. But basically the gist of it, before I get there, the last thing I'll say on you know, there's the kind of enlightened hospitality, and the second thing he preaches is called the 51% rule, and he looks to hire 51%ers. Basically the idea is that if you're 49% solid on the technical skills, but a 51% meaning better than most on you know, kind of like EQ, strong emotional intelligence. Like he's like, I can teach you tools. I can't teach you to be an incredible high EQ individual. And that's something like, it's literally on my CX JD that I have. Like if I want to hire somebody, it's literally like looking for a 51% or hyperlink to Danny Meyer's obsession. Cause I think like anyone that has like on your CX job description, like must be really great at recharge. It's like, anyone can figure out how to use Shopify. You can't
get the fuck out of here with recharge.
must be very proficient in Stay AI.
Nice. There we go.
That's the basic gist. And there's like, if anyone's interested, there's Unreasonable Hospitality is a great book that has like hundreds of examples of people, you know, like somebody walks in and mentions the tiniest little thing about their wedding, that they had an Italian wine they loved and they ended up bringing it to them for dessert because somebody ran around the corner and got it from an establishment. But that's your point, is like so much of this is IRL, right? Hotels do such a great job on all these like kind of IRL interactions where like when you come in, they recognize you. If you go to, like you said, the Ritz or a Waldorf, like you'll go in once, they'll know who you are. And then every single time you walk back into the hotel, they'll remember you by name. Everyone from like the person at the front desk to housekeeping. And a lot of that is like, so let's back up a second. A lot of that is personalization, right? It's like they have the zero party data and they're using that to personalize your experience. They're remembering the food that you ordered at the restaurant, right? Like you go back for a coffee, they remember it. They put your name on the screen, like welcome Mr. Weiss, right? So like all these kind of like personalization things, you know, it's like, how do you turn a one night stay in a hotel to feel like it's like a welcome experience? Like this is your space for one night. And they're hyper-focused on personalization and excelling on every touch point they have. And I think a lot of the question is kind of where you're heading. How do you do that online?
Yeah. Let's hear it.
So
I have nothing to say, so I want to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest kind of, and we've spoken about this, I think season one, where we're talking about like what a billion-dollar idea is, like understanding the ideal customer journey based on like the millions of data points you have from hundreds of thousands or millions of customers, and understanding where customers could or should be heading directionally, that provides the most like best experience can be viewed as like, well, if they have high LTV, then they probably stuck around because they like the products and like the experience. So maybe that's like a data point to look at. But I think we've been, you know, my kind of like dream tool and my dream place to be, and maybe we can talk about this like maybe with a data warehouse and some analysts. The dream is to understand like what is this magical customer journey where somebody comes in at a standard AOV, buys these three products, like what is the ideal next best step? Not like what Rebuy is doing of telling you like if they click this, they'll spend $10 more today. More so like what is the ideal journey that if they don't upsell them on this order, if you're smart, you're not going to upsell them here because the best case scenario is they actually just buy one mascara. And then we know based on all these data points that it's a very high likelihood of them coming back in 3 weeks and buying seven more.
Like you might find, yeah, our best customers are not buying subscription on first purchase or something like that.
And that's kind of like the way I think about on like just the product side, right? Like on the purchase side, like I think understanding what the ideal kind of like best case scenario using all these touch points, using all the zero party data is an interesting one. And I think the biggest kind of like what we're seeing work really well, and we've spoken about this in the past, and everyone's excited about, you know, kind of like plain text emails. Everyone gets excited about it because it's like, it breaks this kind of like, oh, your inbox is full of heavily designed emails. I think what plain text emails does quite well, and if you talk to most customers, they have no idea it's automated. We're just marketers. Mm-hmm. What it does quite well is it feels like you're having this personalized interaction, which mm-hmm. is what hospitality does well. When you come in, it's like, oh, it's Eli again. We know he doesn't eat shellfish. Put him in that corner because he likes that corner.
So I was just thinking about it, and you're totally right because, you know, I know one thing we talk about is like, oh, do some of these marketing things work? Because like we have cognitive dissonance. We have like a bias because we know it, right? And like our customers don't know it. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm also like, Eli, you're like you're the first person that tells me like a lot of the stuff doesn't work, these like loyalty programs and stuff, but like you're also posting your SoulCycle, and I'm trying to figure out like what the difference is, because you've been going to SoulCycle and I know it means a lot to you, like you've written about it in your newsletter where like you're getting like, hey, 10th class, like you've done this, and I'm thinking about it, and one, I think the difference between an e-commerce business and an in real life business is automation and personalization, and I think it doesn't have to take time and take effort, but it has to at least appear it, right? Like I don't think the plain text emails would do as well if A, people knew that it was automated, but B, if it was a graphic thing that they would then know it's not. Like the fact that it appears to them personal works. And as long as they don't know that it's not personalized, it works. I also think though, if you are a little bit more sophisticated and savvy, doing something that can't be faked or is just the perception is that it can't be faked, can't be automated. It's a lot more important. Like they took the time to write your name on something. You can't really have a computer do that.
you're 100% right. I think and I was actually talking to Shopify. We were talking about like retention and plans that they have in mind for like future products. And I think I was kind of giving my spiel like I always do about retention and being recognized for where you are in the customer journey. And when you're a third time customer,
name drop.
Recognized.
Nice name drop.
Always.
Talking to Shopify. Always. Who are you talking to? Toby?
Always a name drop. I was talking, you might know him. He's Robla. He's on Twitter. He was like the Web3 Shopify guy.
Okay.
But now they're kind of thinking AI outside Shopify of that. Guy. A little of everything. But I think what and kind of like the response I got was like, oh, so you're thinking more like a status thing. And it's like, it's not a status thing. It's a recognizing thing, right? It's like when you realize that the company that you're giving money to recognizes where you're at, like there's something. And that's what SoulCycle, your point about SoulCycle, I think that's what they dug into is like, well, obviously it's IRL, so they have that, mm-hmm. right? But it is this hospitality thing where being recognized for your fifth stay or your fifth ride, writing it on paper and drawing it on a card is better than an email. But still, I think the reason why I think most D2C brands fail on that is because it's a fancy designed email that says, welcome to your fifth ride, you now unlocked 26% off for the next 20 minutes. It's so dramatically pushy to upsell versus
a lot of times there's no offer. It's just like very generic, like, oh, thanks so much for your third order. We appreciate you.
The next thought is like, and this is kind of like continuing this thought is like, I tweeted about this last week where like, what do you feel about getting a discount on your birthday? And it's wild to see the difference of thought and opinion. Mm-hmm. Either the best thing ever, love it, wait my whole year for the 10% off, or like, I hate it, it's so lame, it's so silly. Season 3 of Down to Chat is brought to you by TapCart. We talk so often on this podcast about retention, and something that I've seen a ton of brands do lately is they're just like trying so hard to get every single customer to order twice or three times or four times instead of focusing on the group of customers that are already proving to be super strong customers. The beauty of an app is that it is a thing that's focused on the top 10 to 30% of your customers. These are the people that download it. And it's a great opportunity to give these folks early access, special exclusive sales, and just communicate with these people in a much more VIP way. TapCart found that the LTV of these top 10 to 30% of customers that use an app, their LTV increases 2.4x on average versus if they were just website visitors. So it's a great way to increase the communication you have with them, increase the LTV, and just kind of get close to these VIP segments. Listeners of Down to Chat, if you want to check out TapCart, you can get your first 2 months for free. So it's tapcart.com/downtochat. And if you do create an app, we'd love to take a peek. So just shoot it over to Cody and I, and we'd love to give you feedback.
So what do you do? What do you do then if you don't want to do the typical DTC playbook of automation and you want to make it feel... I would love your opinion. Can I give a few ideas I have? One is plain text email. So life cycle plain text email. So have a different post-purchase flow depending on how many orders people have done. Right? Number two would be idea. We haven't done this, but this would be an idea. Maybe the hard part where I don't know the line is like doing the fake personalized stuff, like is that perceived as personal or is it perceived as gimmicky? Like, for example, you could do a post-pilot automated handwritten letter at a certain life cycle if they've made their third purchase. I think that would crush it for most brands, but I don't know. I think that could be one. And then third one, think of it as like CRM. Like if somebody gets into a really high spend, high value tier, like you should probably do like, have something triggered in your CRM that actually has a person reach out to them. Like that's kind of what sales teams do. That's what service-based businesses do. I wonder like what you'll look at. I know this is true for us. This is true for most brands. Is like you'll get a really small percent of your customers, a segment of your customers, responsible for a good amount of revenue. And so it's not like you'd have to go after thousands of customers and tens of thousands of customers, but like it could be that those people, there's some kind of trigger and you do some kind of surprise and delight that actually is a personal touch that takes time and it's less scalable, but you're not doing it on everybody.
I think that you're spot on. The kind of thought here is, and let's kind of bounce back to hotels again, right? Like what you book a hotel and 2 weeks before you get here, you get an email from the concierge that says, hey, Eli, I noticed you're coming in And there, any good hotel will add one little sentence about, like, I notice you're coming in from X, or I notice you're spending your time with Y. And they send that email to everyone, but they took this tiny little moment to create like a little personalized thing that shows that they gave a shit. I think a lot of that is missing in e-commerce, whereas, like, to your point, like, you can take a macro or you can take a card, but you can just add that one little snippet where it's like, you've made it to three orders. You're one of our best customers. You know, like, thank you so much. It doesn't have to be like signed by Bobby, but it can just be a message from anyone. I think it would crush. 100% it would crush. I think it's the hospitality piece is so much of it for me is recognition. Is like, I see you, I appreciate you.
Recognition, but
recognition is recognition. Yeah,
it's been a week.
I'm on one today. Yeah, is recognition. It's like, I see you. I see where you're at. We appreciate your loyalty. I think that brands on the D2C side have been so transactional with loyalty, and I think that's kind of the downside of any loyalty program that exists out of the box today. Is all like, subscribe to my whatever and you get 5 points. We've kind of beaten this already, but it's kind of all transactional. And I think that
what I don't get is, why hasn't anybody done it well though? Like, I know, like, everyone with Web3 was like, we're redoing how loyalty is done, and like, that most of it was BS, but like, why isn't there a good loyalty program that isn't transactional? Like, maybe it's the membership thing. I just know, like, it does work in some industries, and I don't know if like brands have totally gotten it to catch on, but like, we should be rewarding our best customers with something that they want. But I guess I don't know if there's a way to do it non-transactionally.
I think the reason why the transactional way is the way that everyone's gone is because that's when you think about something out of the box, like, that's the only thing that's transferable to every business, right? Like, the only thing that's transferable to every business is a discount code. So what some people have done is like, they've built a layer on top of that. They've taken something out of the box and they've added, like, for 20 orders, you get access to whatever products and whatever. And I think that's what kind of like the Web3 universe was like, to your point, that's where they were heading. I think like thinking about what is somebody that is obsessed with, for example, like, if somebody's obsessed with Shake Shack and they get an opportunity to go hear Danny speak, that's 10 times more valuable than like a discount code. But to somebody that doesn't give a shit, that's so stupid, I'd rather be home on Netflix, right? So I think it's like deeply understanding what your customers value. Like, for us, it's like, if we had the unlock where at a certain point there's like a ask me anything with Bobby or like a Zoom and you can unlock it at X point in your journey, I think like that would crush, right?
You're right. Yeah, you got to understand what your customers want, and it's going to be highly dependent on for brands. I can tell you from mistaken firsthand experience, what you think what your customers want and your best customers want is probably not what they actually want unless you've asked them.
Yeah, we've asked in our roadies group, which just hit like 15K, we asked and I was like blown away. It's like, you know, obviously get some of the basics, but you know, people want to give you more money just in like a way that feels like something that everyone brought up was like, they want exclusive products or merch, right? It's like recognition. They want to feel like we're part of this club and we're exclusive. And a lot of it is like, I think about the lounge, like the Amex lounge, right? It's like, you're not getting a massage for 60 minutes. You're just like, you're in an exclusive area with kind of
there's
like
a little of exclusivity, like outside of the recognition. There's definitely some of that, probably depending on the customer and their demographic.
Yeah. I think Amex is a good example of the exclusivity because it's like kind of like a high, they call them the Henrys, high earners, not rich yet. Yeah. There's a little bit of that, but it's like, you feel
Soho
like
House
you're
type thing.
I'm allowed to be in a place that nobody else is, or most people aren't. I don't care what, you know, if their drinks are kind of ich, but it feels good. Yeah.
Cool. No, I think that's awesome. Anything else on this topic before we go on? I know we got a shorter episode today.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's it for now. I'm still very, very early in my thought here from the hospitality to D2C universe on a practical level. So if anyone has any thoughts, or if anyone's like, hey, I've worked in hospitality and this crushed, drop us a DM, but also in the DM, let us know what your favorite flavor of seltzer is.
Let us know. Yeah. Favorite seltzer. All right, cool. I got a quick one. And then I want to talk about one growth thing. So one thing that we've been working on, and we tweeted about this, is trying to figure out CX personnel needs, you could say, and kind of forecasting that, because, you know, there will be times where it spikes and it goes low, and obviously it's difficult to not know. And when you're growing really fast, you know, outside of, you know, forecasting supply chain, it's probably one of the other things that you can really put a stress on your system, right, is your CX. And I think a lot of, like, before you came on, we grew really fast and we didn't have you here. Like, we were stressing that system way too much and it became a liability. And obviously, we, you know, you've been able to help us stabilize that and actually make it a strength. And we just want to make sure. So that's like the background, right? So what we've been doing is we've been trying to find correlation between tickets, number of CX tickets, and different factors to see if anything else that we're forecasting can help us predict. Anything to add on that before we go?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd add is Cody's become a huge forecasting guy over the last 6 months. And we've built out like really rigorous forecasts in all different parts of the business. And I've just been excited about the idea of waking up in the morning and not being stressed that, oh my God, what happens if we have a couple of thousand tickets pop in?
Mm-hmm. Cool, love it. And so what we've been doing is started this little spreadsheet and kind of just running some quick correlation analysis on it. And we use, you know, Funnel to like pull in data. So we pull different things into a spreadsheet and checking it. And just wanted to share, here's what we tried. We got some good ideas on Twitter, but there's, you know, not, there's essentially, right, if you were looking at like confidence level intervals, like, you know, a 0.9 something would be super high. And we're at like a 0.58 for spend and orders, which means that there's definitely some correlation. 58% of it can be explained. 58% of the ticket volume increase or decrease can be explained by spend or orders. But to me, I'm like, tell me how you feel. I'm like decently confident in that, but I wouldn't like totally make a bet on forecast based on that.
I think it if we would remove, and this is like a hard theoretical because it's pretty difficult to remove, but if we were to remove all the like kind of like one-off ops type issues from the ticket count, yeah, I think we'd be, I'd stronger, be very confident that we'd be, yeah, closer to like 7, 8, 9.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I think
okay.
So.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah. We looked at new orders. My theory there was like, okay, maybe new prospects or new customers have a higher probability of or higher likeness to, you know, submit a ticket because they have questions about the product or shade matching or something not. And we actually found less of a correlation there. So were you surprised on that or not?
I wasn't terribly surprised just because I think a lot of the, like, we have questions that come pre-order, like more than most, which I guess would make sense, right? New customers would be, but that would probably be slightly earlier. So a lot of correlation testing was like the day that the order comes through versus the tickets we got that day. I think because there are quite a lot of questions that are like shade matching pre-order, there's that too. I was not dramatically shocked. Not hugely shocked.
And so that's pretty much what we've tested. You know, what other ideas? I think one that, you know, very smart guy Dave Recook had on Twitter was like quiz submissions, because they run a lot of, you know, quiz paid acquisition, and same for us. So I think that's one we'll pull. That would be interesting. What else do you think would be like the next few we would test and maybe can report back on?
So one thing I did test yesterday was basically I had somebody on our team pull all the dates that we had a product launch and basically put a 2 at those days. All the other days that we had 0 launch, we put a 0. And the 7 days before and after, we put a 1. And I was trying to see if there's any correlation between launch and post-launch versus ticket volume. And that was also like a 0.49.
So yeah, not super strong. Oh, and another one that somebody had was velocity of certain SKUs. So, you know, see if certain categories or certain SKUs are more correlated. What are your thoughts? Because we haven't actually gotten to talk about it live yet on that. Like, have you noticed anything anecdotally just from like your data?
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I've seen that our hero products are kind of like the big concerns, questions that we get. So I think that's probably slightly correlated. I think it's hard to completely pull because basically we're using tags and you'd basically start tagging like based on every item in every order. It would probably be a big lift. There's probably a better way to figure it out, though.
It's definitely a big lift and definitely a good amount of data, but we can probably automate it and do a bunch of it. So I think there's a chance. And then while we're doing it, because I'm just on a little bit of a correlation kick, and I had the data in there, I looked at spend in orders and spend in new orders, which is not something I've really looked at least in a while, and found kind of interesting. But spend in orders was a 0.71. Spend in new orders was a 0.83. So it got me thinking, and I tweeted about this as well, like, is there any is it worthwhile to track that as a metric at all? You could say it's similar to MER, but it's not really. It's a little different because this is looking more over time. MER is just during a certain time period, how much of my revenue did I spend? But this kind of has more correlation, so it accounts for increases and decreases within them. So, like, again, like, ultimate holy grail is like media mix modeling, where you're actually like looking at longer time periods with multiple channels, and you're looking at correlations between your this is going to be a really good segue to the next topic, by the way, not on purpose, but if you are looking at your kind of correlation between spend on different platforms and total spend, and then like whatever your main KPI is, which is usually revenue and new orders. But I thought that this would be an interesting, like, it would be really interesting to track this over time, like weekly or monthly, and see if your spend becomes more or less correlated with new orders. So I don't know. I can't say I'm definitely going to, but it could be an interesting thing to just like set up in the background and automate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm happy to see it. I mean, I think 0.83 is strong, so it makes me feel a little bit better. I'm like, oh, our ad spend is not that fucking wasted.
Yes. Fair enough.
All right, cool. So I wanted to talk a little bit about something that's been in my mind, kind of like more of like a test of the week.
We haven't done a testy in a while.
Haven't done a testy. Yeah. I could definitely share a few, but one that's kind of definitely been on my mind is kind of this whole, excuse me for using a buzzword, of incrementality. And that is a term that I've seen that's just being thrown around so much and sometimes so poorly, because I don't know if everyone's actually measuring it properly, because it's not an easy thing to actually measure. And so just for anybody who's listening, kind of incrementality is really trying to understand which of your purchases would have happened and which would have not happened if you didn't do marketing. So which are happening because of marketing, which and which aren't. Because the reason that's important, you can have good return on ad spend. You can have good email attribution, and it's not incremental, meaning those people would have purchased anyways. For example, if you are doing something like anything with view through attribution, whether that's Pinterest 28-day view attribution or SMS or Klaviyo attribution, your numbers are going to look really good, but a lot of that was going to happen anyways. So it's not really the best way to be like, oh, this is my return on my investment. Mm-hmm. Same thing with direct mail, right? That's why incrementality testing with the holdout is so important. Because you really got to make sure that, you know, you understand your return on your investment, which is really should be calculated as like an incremental return on investment. Because if you send, you know, 1,000 postcards out to people and, you know, you get a bunch of orders, a lot of those orders would have happened already. Email, SMS, just organic means. So, you know, it's really important to understand the lift. So there's two primary forms of incrementality testing. One is a holdout, one's a geo lift. A holdout, technically they're both holdouts. A holdout would be like you could use this for direct mail or something, right? You will just take the segment and you will just create two groups. You'll have a control and you'll have a treatment group. And this is what we do for it. And you just will not send the marketing, whatever your investment in testing, to the control group. You just won't send them postcards. And then you will send them to the treatment group. And you will compare differences in response rate, whatever KPIs you're looking at, what percentage of them ordered or what the revenue was. And then you're able to kind of come up with an incrementality factor or an incremental ROAS or an incremental revenue. And so you can say, okay, here's how much we spent on this group that we sent it to. And we had this much more revenue than the other group. Let's say the other group had $5 of revenue and this group had $7. Well, only two of that was incremental. And if we spent a dollar to make two incremental dollars, that would be an iROAS or an incremental ROAS of 2. Mm-hmm. And that's how I look at it. So it's every dollar I spend, I'm actually making 2, because most people, when they look at ROAS, they think every dollar I spend, I'm making 2, and they go and spend 10, and why am I not making 20? Well, it's because a lot of that would have happened anyways.
Right, right, right.
Following makes sense. I mean, I know you're familiar, but is that clear or not?
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense. I think with all this, like, people just kind of double down really quickly when something quote unquote works, mm-hmm. and they didn't realize that, like you're saying, they'd be getting the money anyway.
And it's hard because you end up wasting a lot of budget. And who is not, especially in this economy, these macro times, like, who is not trying to be more efficient? I don't know a single brand who wouldn't want to be more efficient. And I don't think this stuff is important if you're seven figures. I think at eight figures it becomes important. Because like Sean said on last season when you had him on, like, you don't really need an attribution tool at seven figures because you probably should only be spending money on Facebook. And if your customers are buying, your Facebook ads are probably working. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, is it this, is that? But as you get into eight and nine figures, I talked to somebody from a brand recently who was spending 10K a day on TikTok in platform, and metrics look great. Attribution tools look great. They shut off TikTok because they had a hunch it wasn't that incremental, or they ran an incrementality test, shut it off. No change to new customer revenue.
Wow.
That's a lot of money for a brand. So the other way to do it is with a geo lift test. And essentially what you would do, same thing as a holdout, but because this is acquisition, you don't have like segments of people to kind of hold out in your customer file, is you would run media in certain regions and not do it in certain regions. And you're just looking at the difference between the two. Mm. And so we are starting to use a tool called House. It's HAUS that I've been introduced to. And they're kind of automate and do a lot of this for us. And it's super cool. So I'm gonna share and learn more. But the few main things that we're really going to try to understand is like YouTube. YouTube is a harder one to be able to measure the impact of because a lot of it is non-click based. Okay. So that's an important one. Like, essentially, that's really where it becomes really important when things are non-click.
So like billboard.
Exactly. We're not doing that yet, but out of home would be definitely a good one. TV is another good one.
TV, yeah.
Another one, right, like Google brand search. A lot of times people argue, is that incremental? Would that purchase have happened just through another means, organic search, if we didn't bid on it? So that's a really interesting one. Performance Max is another one, because that's another one where you can't really see how much of this is new customer revenue or not. And then like, so here's where I've seen it kind of thrown around, and it's probably not the best use of incremental. A lot of people are like, oh, I've seen retargeting be incremental, or they haven't. And like, they haven't really tested it properly. And kind of like, it's kind of like, oh, like, does the one day click or last click look good? And they're like, oh, this is incremental. But there's a lot of things like that, like retargeting on Facebook, that maybe is or isn't. For example, I was talking to somebody from Meta, and a lot of media buyers have really strong opinions on campaign objectives and optimization. And they think that like doing anything that's like video views or reach or traffic is complete waste of money. But Meta will tell you that sometimes that gets people in your funnel. And even though you can't see the direct return from that thing because they're not buying from that, it actually is better overall. And so the only real way to know if that's worthwhile, or the simplest and best, is with incrementality testing. You do a holdout. So you just be like, I'm going to do video views in half of the country, and I'm not going to do video views in the first half. And am I seeing any differences in my main KPIs, which is revenue, new customer revenue, stuff like that? So I'll share more with what we're learning and testing, but I'm super excited just to be able to get that actual accurate data and really know what's worth it, what's not, and not just relying on kind of a hunch. So
it's a good test of the week.
We'll have a lot of testies a week. All right, we're at four, so I got to get going. This was a fun one, a quick one, but enjoyed it.
Been a pleasure. I will talk to you soon.
All right, see you guys next week.